Hey there, and welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. My name is Vanita Litvak, and I am so grateful you're here. I'm an ASHA certified speech language pathologist, author, and augmentative and alternative communication consultant who is obsessed with helping SLPs like you stop reinventing the wheel and connect with other SLPs in the trenches. Have you ever wondered how other SLPs seem to be doing it all with ease? Well, around here, you'll get to hear firsthand how SLPs are really getting things done while keeping evidence-based practice and self-care in mind. Think of this as a coffee date with your SLP friends. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged while we learn together. The mindfulness movement is gaining a lot of traction lately. What is the science behind it, and how can you incorporate the principles in therapy? Today, I am joined by Rachel Musial, a pediatric speech language pathologist who specializes in mindfulness, mental health, and self-care. Rachel is a big sister to two siblings that both attended speech therapy, which ignited her passion for the field. Originally from Chicago, Rachel attended the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, where she studied both speech pathology and Spanish. She then completed her Master's of Arts in Speech Pathology at Northern Illinois University. Currently residing in Denver, Rachel works as a pediatric home health provider with primarily Spanish-speaking little ones aged birth to five. She's a strong advocate for parent education and involvement and strives to make speech therapy as functional and practical as possible. With the onset of COVID-19, Rachel began to realize the importance of mental health for herself and her clients. Speech with Rach was born in March 2020 as a way to share mindfulness, mental health, and early intervention strategies with the SLP community. Through a six-week live course, podcast episodes, and hands-on materials, Rachel guides prospective SLPs and current therapists through their clinical endeavors. When she isn't treating little ones or posting on social media, Rachel spends her free time in the Rocky Mountains, oh, how nice, with a foster pup, hiking, camping, and living in the present moment. Now that we've got all that covered, let's get started. Hey, Rachel, thank you so much for coming today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. This is such an honor. I have been a fan of yours for a long, long time.
That made me blush, but I am like a huge fan of yours now. And I love all of your reels that you put out there. And I love all of the information you're sharing about mindfulness and how you're just making such an impact in the field. So why don't you tell listeners how you got started and where you're at today?
Yeah, so you covered, a good amount in the intro, but I think for me is a really big shift that I noticed in my SLP career was I started in the schools, started doing some home health. And then as I shared a little bit, when COVID hit, the spiritual, mental health, mindfulness side of me really started to take over. And when I started my speech page, I surprisingly found that what was really resonating with therapists and students and parents was not as much some of those early intervention techniques, but really focusing on things like mindfulness, emotional regulation, and mental health. And so last year I was like, this seems to be my calling. And I started my page, and now it's been a year later. And it's been really cool to see how accepting and open the speech world has been to mindfulness, because we chatted a little bit about this before, but it's becoming a very new field and a very new topic that is getting a lot of buzz in a lot of different areas. So I'm really excited to see that the speech world is so open in arms to accepting this and learning more about it. So that's what my page talks about, mindfulness and mental health, both for the therapist, the parent, and for the little themselves.
Yes, I love that. So what are some things that you like to do on a daily basis that encompass mindfulness or just like help attribute to this practice?
Yeah, in my own personal life?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, that's the big thing that I talk about on my page is that I think the really important part of being a speech therapist is being relatable and being able to connect. And so I like to ensure that if I'm going to be preaching about this stuff, that I am using it in my daily life. So, even looking around my space right now, I'm very conscious about how I organize my space. So I keep things clean. I have incense, I have crystals. I try to set intentions in the environment that I'm working in to let myself know that I'm present and focused. And I am someone that was diagnosed with, actually, I was just diagnosed with ADHD like 2 months ago. And I knew I had it my whole life, but mindfulness has helped so much. You have no idea. So much in finishing tasks, being truly present while also struggling with my ADHD. So even just carrying it through in my little day-to-day practices has allowed me to just be more present and productive, really.
That's awesome. That's great. You know, you're practicing and preaching it. So what is mindfulness if someone has never heard of the term before and they're just hearing it for the first time?
Yeah, I think that first off, it can kind of be like a myth or a preconceived idea about what mindfulness is. And I think sometimes people think, oh, to be mindful, it means to be calm, to be happy, to just love your life. And that is not what it means. Mindfulness, technically, the scientific definition is, it is the practice of bringing your attention to the present moment without judgment or expectation. So if that present moment is a moment of anger, it's feeling that moment fully and allowing yourself to be present there without judging yourself. And that's why it's so important in the speech world, I feel like, because we talk about with our kids all the time, the importance and the power they have over their choices and over the way that they react to things. And by teaching this, it has allowed both them and myself to kind of slow down and accept whatever's going on without judging it. Because in our lives, we have a lot of ideas in our head. Things should be this way, right? I should do this. I should do that. And if we hold ourselves to the things that we should or shouldn't do, we're always in our minds. We're always thinking, what's next? What do I have to complete? And that's anxiety. And when we're living in the past, focusing on all the things we wish we would have changed, that's what we kind of call depression. So mindfulness says those things don't exist. The only moment we have is this present moment. So we can't live in the past. We can't live in the future because we can't control those. The only thing we can control are our thoughts, beliefs, perceptions, and actions in this moment in front of us. That is it.
Wow. You just took a very complex set of terminology and broke it down so simply. That's amazing.
And
people like self-diagnose quite a bit too. I mean, I love how you gave the definition for anxiety, which is always thinking about what's next and then living in the past and kind of ruminating on those thoughts as depression. Like, I mean, that makes so much sense. Yeah. And I like too that people can see that timeline. Like, this is like, if you're doing this, that's anxiety. If you're doing this, that's depression. But what's in the middle is like what we call mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And that's like what you can actually control.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I'm so glad it makes sense. I know it can be kind of complex. So,
yeah, definitely. So, what is the impact that mindfulness has on someone's brain and their overall health?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is that, you know, for me, I had a wake up call when I did my CFY year. I've shared this before on my page, but I had 85 kids in my CFY year and I was at 3 schools and my body gave up on me. I was in the hospital at 25, like getting a colonoscopy, an endoscopy, bronchitis, all of these things, hives, and I couldn't function. And all of a sudden, I was like, hold on a second. My body is telling me something. And when I moved to Denver, everything went away. And I realized that I had really changed my lifestyle. And what I learned was mindfulness shows us that and the field of science has really showed us that thoughts and emotions are 100% interconnected with the physical process of the body. It just is. And so if you know that your brain can make an impact on your body and you have the power to not feel in pain all the time, it's really cool to know that you can change those things. So I think the biggest thing to learn about mindfulness is that it was really, the idea of stress in general is a really habitual thing that our ancestors needed. So our ancestors had so many stressors to bring food home, to survive. And when that would happen, their body would go into the state of, you know, that fight, flight, or flee response. So when our body starts getting that cortisol, those epinephrine, all those stress hormones, our sympathetic nervous system kicks in. And I kind of like to think that in like a car, that's the accelerator. So you imagine pressing on that. And the parasympathetic nervous system is our brake. So that's what calms us down. But here's the thing. The body can't determine the difference between physiological and psychological stress. So you being chased by a lion or you spilling coffee on yourself can have the same reaction in your brain and have that same process kick in if you do not pause and use mindfulness. So our body goes into things called stress reactions, where it feels stressed, it feels nervous, and it reacts. But what mindfulness does, it creates a space and it allows us to have a stress response, which is acknowledging and noticing those things so that you can have a little bit more control over them. So it really changes how your body takes in and manages stress. And we know with the brain that with plasticity, the more and more you practice it, the more and more it becomes naturally. So I am a person that's diagnosed with anxiety and ADHD and depression. And I really think that I have not cured, but aided in a lot of that simply because of my mindfulness practices. Because now I feel as though I have that pause where I can respond to things, I find myself naturally not getting as wound up by maybe little things in the past that would have affected me before. And in the speech world, we know there's 1,000 things going on in our days that could set us off at any time. And if every time that happens, you allow your body to go through that whole fight, flight, or flee response, I mean, it's just so intense on your body. And then if you don't take the time to recharge, to acknowledge it, to actually sit in it, it stays in your body. And that's where we end up with burnout, because we don't let all that energy that built up go out in a healthy way.
That's so interesting. So that's like what leads to burnout is like that buildup of the energy.
Yeah, because everything in life is an energy exchange, really. Right? Everything we do, drinking coffee, touching something, it's all energy moving. And as therapists, we take on a lot of energy from our clients, their problems, their concerns, their worries. And in the Buddhist culture, there's actually a word for this. When energy builds up, it's called a samskara. And these energy, they stay in your body. And if you don't deal with them over time, they end up weighing you down so much that, like me, you end up in the hospital and you burn out and your body will literally tell you, you can't do this anymore. I am warning you. I am showing you, you can't keep living your life this way.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. I wonder like how our ancestors, like they obviously weren't like, I'm going to practice mindfulness today, but I think our society as a whole has just, well, maybe, okay. I might be wrong. Cause there are monks and Buddhists and they date back a long time. Right. But not to like caveman, like ancestors. Again, so they probably weren't thinking about mindfulness, but the expectations today are probably so much different than they were back then. Like they might've had time to like sit down with their family and, you know, get rid of that bad energy. Whereas like, we're always like, go, 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 go. And the expectation is always to do more.
Exactly. And that's totally, I mean, especially I think in our field, we're such high achievers naturally that we're always pushing ourselves. And right, like you said, we don't have that maybe that natural time built in where we're going from a traffic concern to a student stress to a teacher comment. And it's consistent. And if we perceive it psychologically as a threat, our body's going to react to it.
Mm-hmm. So like, what is the difference between rest and mindfulness? Is there a difference?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Yeah. So, okay. So in mindfulness, they kind of say like, there's a difference between relaxation and mindfulness. So rest and mindfulness to me are a little bit more of the same thing. Relaxation and mindfulness are a little bit different. So really to be mindful just means you're being present. So in this moment with you right now, I am practicing mindfulness because I am here with you. I'm in this moment. My phone is off. I'm not thinking about another thing. Relaxation might be you are fully in that moment, whatever you're doing, presently accepting it without putting maybe expectations or concerns on it. So a big thing that I've heard in the speech field or with a lot of my friends is that they really struggle to just like sit down and watch TV, to just relax. And what I tell them in that is you can be mindful in that moment and also calm by letting yourself know that you don't have an expectation in that moment. You can text on your phone, you can do this, but anytime you come into an activity with an expectation about it, it's a lot harder to be present or relaxed. And so I think that mindfulness kind of just goes in with that because I don't know, I feel like when I'm mindful, I feel a little bit more in control and a little bit more relaxed, even if I'm at a moment of like stress and screaming or anger, because I've experienced those emotions without mindfulness before. Like I said, I used to be very reactive, impulsive person. And what I've noticed now is it just allows me to slow down in that moment, regardless of what it is, even if it's just watching TV and just accepting it and not judging myself or saying, I should be doing this. I should be writing this report. Just saying, I'm going to relax because I know that my body needs this. Like with kids, they need recess. And I posted on my Instagram story yesterday. I was so upset. I asked how many people take a lunch. And about 70% of people said they take a lunch and 30% said they don't.
Not at all.
And I was like, oh man, no. And I was shocked by that because it's not their fault. I mean, a lot of times we have things going on, but we literally need breaks. Like our body needs to step away from things. And we see it with our kids, right? They go to recess, they play a game, we set them up for something else. And if we're not putting those moments in the day where we can step away and kind of like recharge, it's just going to be more stressful and more difficult. And especially with teletherapy and a lot of the things that we are doing right now, we have to really be proactive in building that time in. Like I could go back to back with all my sessions, but I force myself when I finish to walk outside. I sit on my balcony and I say, I celebrate that I just finished that session. I'm not going to think about it anymore. I'm not going to worry about the next one. When we get there, we are going to be there together. And so it just has, you have to be proactive with it, I think, and kind of build some of that time in. But as you start doing that, it becomes more natural because mindfulness does consist of formal and informal practices. Like you can sit down and say, I'm going to do a formal mindfulness practice right now, like a body scan, which is a meditation. Or you could be like, I'm informally practicing it by just accepting at whatever's in front of me. So there's some different ways to kind of go about it as well.
I love that. So what about like maybe someone who's just starting off, like maybe their CFY year and, you know, time management is still a skill that's being worked on, or somebody who is more seasoned, but still in an environment where the caseload is like 110 students and there's just not enough time in the day. What are your realistic suggestions for them? Do you have any?
Yeah. Well, so first off, I think one of the biggest things is kind of changing our mindset in general of maybe what our role is, because I think sometimes we make ourselves crazier than we need to be because we put expectations on maybe what a session needs to look like. So simply by changing our expectation of what our role is can allow us to feel less stressed. So for me, I've kind of shared this before, but I really wish that speech therapist CCC stood for communication, confidence, and connection. Because I think that at the end of the day, well, it's so important for our kids to know our tick and language and such. It's so most important that they're feeling safe, supported, and seen. So I think when I first changed my mindset to, you know, yes, I'm the expert with this child, but I'm also their friend. I don't need to be in teacher mode the whole time. I can be present and connecting. That itself just took some of the stress off of it for me. And then another big thing of when I was in the schools, I really worked on setting healthy boundaries with my words and my actions, because people will continue to treat us in the way that they do unless we set that boundary. And while it can be so easy to want to be that yes woman that takes on every kid and checks in every group, we know that when you say yes to someone, when your heart's maybe not really in it, the only person that suffers is you. So you have to learn when you can set some boundaries. So for example, now I tell myself, like, I do not do work on the weekends. Like, that is my personal boundary. When I was in the schools, if a teacher said to me, hey, really quick, can you come observe this child? I would say, you know what? I'm really working on keeping myself organized. Right now I have a lot going on. Would you mind sending me an email and we can set up a date together? So it's just setting that boundary to people around you to show that you're there, you're a support, but you're also a human. And you need to take things on and let them come into your life as well, as much as you can. And like I said, again, you can't say no to everything or yes to everything, but kind of learning where you can maybe give yourself 2 minutes to run to the bathroom instead of going into that classroom and observing that kiddo when you are just all over the place that day. It'd be way better to put it in your calendar in 2 weeks and then be ready and present for that moment itself.
Yeah, that's such a great suggestion. And I like that you mentioned that some people can be like yes people, because I am definitely a yes person, and having a child has helped me to really slow down and realize like what's important. And, you know, one of the biggest like pieces of advice, I think I shared this in another podcast interview I just did about mindfulness, was that, you know, instead of saying yes when someone asks you a question or feeling like you have to answer right then, it's just say, hey, can I get back to you about that? Or, you know, making just kind of putting a delay on your response. And that has been so helpful, because I felt like I always had to give them a yes or no, like right then. And more often than not, it was obviously a yes, because I didn't want to disappoint that person. But it is totally okay to say, can I get back to you on that? And it's been really, really helpful.
Yeah. Like I said, me too. And I'm the kind of person where I need to have it in writing. So I would always say, can you email me just so we have it like both on our books, so we remember this conversation happened and we'll get to it. And I always then was able to get to it, rather than a teacher mentioning something to me in the hallway. And later in the day, I go, oh shoot, I was supposed to pop in the kindy room, you know, at 2 o'clock and so it, it's just like setting that boundary and saying, hey, this is how I operate. It's not that I don't want to talk to you, but I need to set healthy boundaries for both of us so that we're effective teachers.
Yeah, I like that. Do you think that part of the problem is maybe people don't do like an inventory of their values or what works best for them?
Yes, 100%. I think too. And again, in grad school, we're really high achievers and we always want to do as much as we can. And what I did I run a course called the Empowered SLP. And one of the exercises that I have people do is I have them write their schedule out from the time they wake up and the time they go to bed. And then they take a highlighter and they highlight anything in their day that they do just for themselves. And most women had nothing, not a single moment in the day that was just for them. And I was like, even if it's 5 minutes to meditate in the morning, or if it's a walk around the block, you need something that raises you up. You can't give your whole day away, because in our fields, We are helpers, and there are always going to be people to help. But if we can't help ourselves, we're not effective therapists. And when I worked in the schools last year in Denver, I couldn't pay my bills. I was getting food from the food pantry, and I wasn't present, and I couldn't be there for my kids. And that wasn't fair. And it was like, if I can't be there presently and fully, they can't either. So I need to do a little audit and say, what's working? What's not working? How can I show up and be the best version of myself?
Yeah. Oh, you're amazing. Thank you so much for like sharing and being open and honest. I think that it's going to resonate with people so much more. So you talked a lot about like what the SLPs can do to relate to mindfulness. Is there anything else that you wanted to share about like the role of the SLP? Or do you want to talk about?
I think the biggest thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to kind of say is like the way that I kind of like think, because some people go, well, so how do you use mindfulness with a three-year-old, right? Like you can't be like, hey, stop, be present. But what you do is you teach them to acknowledge and accept their emotions. So that's one of the biggest things in mindfulness is we don't necessarily let things, we don't always let it go, but we let it be. So we don't say this is a bad feeling, it needs to go away, but we acknowledge it and we notice it. And we start to say, okay, why am I doing this? What can I do in this moment? And so kind of a way that I use it with my kiddos is I always, always start my session with a mindfulness activity because especially with telemedicine, they are coming in from lunch, right? Or they're running around and I am finishing up a kiddo. They come in, their energy's up here, my energy's down there. We need to kind of refocus. So usually what we do is we start by checking in on our emotions. And I use sometimes the zones, just like an emotion sheet. And we just talk about both of us, how we're feeling. And I think it's so important to model to our students that you don't have to be happy all the time, but you do need to have some control and some reasons for your emotions. So I like doing an activity like that because we both check in, we recenter. And that's where I can model things like, you know, I'm feeling angry today because this, this, and this. And we talk about what our strategies are, what we can do, how it feels in our body. And those are the kiddos that can self-regulate and really handle communication breakdowns, maybe better than the kiddos that when it happens, we say, stop, don't do that, don't yell. Instead, we say, how are you feeling? You look upset. What does it feel like to be upset? You know, what can we do in this moment? Can we try some belly breathing? Can we calm our body down? And so I literally give them formal practices to do. And I remember when I worked in the schools, this cutest thing ever. I had this little three-year-old and I remember one day he came up to me and he grabs me by the arm and he goes, I need to do my belly breathing. He was so upset and we just looked at each other and we took our breaths and he was better. And I was like, how cool is that? This three-year-old can handle this communication breakdown simply because we took the time to employ him with the skills to do so. Mindfulness is not reactive, it's more preventative, so that later in the day, if you're feeling not mindful, not present, you can use those strategies, those ideas, and those practices to be in the moment. So that's really how I like to use it with my littles, is let them know that they have power in their thoughts and that working on positive thoughts. And I've shared a little bit before about positive affirmations, and that's a big area for both myself and my kids that I've used also. Do you want me to kind of share how positive affirmations work?
Yeah, I would love that.
So positive affirmations, I think, you know, we've probably seen it thrown around. They are statements in the present moment that are positive and personal to us. So kind of the whole idea is that the universe or energy can't tell the difference between negative and positive. Rather, like attracts like. So whatever you're putting out there, you're going to receive. So if we are always talking about and focusing on what we don't have or what we don't want, we're telling the universe, we're telling our brain, hey, that's where our focus is right now. And instead, positive affirmations start to retrain the brain to believe things that are true, even if they are not yet. So a lot of times we will use positive affirmations to either build ourselves or our kiddos' confidence up. So for myself, like every morning, I have a few that I say, and I look in the mirror and I say to myself, I am the expert. Everything works out for me always. If it's for me, it won't pass me. And I have those few things. And what that does is tell my brain, I am the expert. I am this. I am that. And even if it's not true, when you say I am, your brain really believes it, because we all know that you and I right now could look at the same thing and perceive it differently, because we create our reality. So if we know that we create our reality, why not choose to try to have it be more positive and focused on things we want to achieve and be, rather than what we don't have? So I'll go through with my kiddos and we'll practice before our session, and we'll say, I control my emotions. I choose to have a great day. I am smart. I am hardworking. And we practice them and we say them together, and they start to believe them. And it's really cute to hear their 2 and 3 year old little voices and 4 year old voices say all these things. And just seeing them say it and start to believe it more and more, I have seen has allowed them to take more risks. Because when they're feeling overwhelmed, I'll say, hey, you know what we say. I can do anything. I have the power to choose. I can try this. And it's reminders for them to not give up, but maybe push a little bit more in that zone of proximal development and push just a little bit to kind of get some of those skills with some confidence.
I love that. I bet it is so cute hearing those little kids say that too.
God, it's incredible. I really got the idea for using it with little kids from this. There's this adorable little girl all over the internet. I think her name is Scarlett, and she looks in the mirror with her mom every morning when they're doing their hair. And she says, I am smart. I am sassy. I am beautiful. And I was like, oh my gosh, wait, if this little girl can do it, why are we not doing it?
Yeah. I love
that. Let's empower our students.
So you said something, and I want to like kind of talk about it a little bit. I don't think like you meant this, but I think it can be interpreted this way, that, you know, some of the positive affirmations may be like not true, but like we're creating our reality. But I'm just thinking, like, a lot of the things that you said seemed really realistic. Like, should a positive affirmation like be so outlandish where it's like, I'm a millionaire? Or should it be more, I mean, maybe that's what someone wants it to be, but should they be more like, just like maybe the opposite of a negative, like, thought you might have about yourself? You saying like you're an expert, like you probably are an expert to a lot of people, you know? So I consider that to be true. And then the things that you were saying, like that kids might say, like, I am beautiful, I am smart. Again, I don't think that that is so crazy or not accurate. I think that that is probably very true. And I love how it's reframed so that they can think that. So I just want to make sure that people know that these positive affirmations aren't just like untrue things that you write about yourself that you wish you could be. These are things that are like actually true, that maybe other people think about you, or that you should be thinking about yourself if you're not in this like negative headspace.
Yes. I mean, I think it can go a little bit of both ways. I think with our kiddos, like you said, I think the biggest thing is just that we are so intense on ourselves. We're such big critics, and we talk to ourselves sometimes so harshly. So it's just giving ourselves permission to allow ourselves to believe these things. However, though, I have a notebook where I wrote affirmations for in 5 years. And I do have one that says I am a multimillionaire entrepreneur.
There you go.
Because you can also manifest things. And that's a whole nother thing, is kind of setting those long-term goals. But I think the most important thing is that anytime we're talking about an affirmation, it's not necessarily like being an identity, but maybe having a behavior. So maybe instead of saying like, I am someone, or I work out every day, that's an action, right? Working out every day. Instead, you change that to say, I am someone who works out. Because again, you're not necessarily putting it with an action, but the behavior and the idea of how you relate to yourself and your self-image.
All right. I love that. Thank you for providing that clarification.
Yeah, of course.
And those manifestations do work, people. I wrote something down for like an entire year. And it happened. And I shared about this on like social media as well. I wanted to be an approved ASHA provider, and that process is very lengthy, but I wrote it down every single day, and then it finally came true. So yes, manifestations work just as well as like the positive affirmations.
Yes, exactly. Because you're literally telling your brain, like, I am this, I'm going to be this. You got yourself there. Oh, I love that. I love hearing success stories. I manifested my boyfriend, funny enough.
In 2017,
I wrote down a list of, I wrote down a list of non-negotiables for what I wanted in a partner. And I forgot I did it. It was years ago. And I was looking through my notes the other day and I found it. And like every single thing that I wrote was my boyfriend. I was like, I literally manifested him. I don't understand.
It's good though. And I think this goes back to the question that I asked, which is, do you feel like people don't know enough about themselves, about what their boundaries are or what their values are? Because I know I didn't know that for a long time. And when I finally did an inventory of like, these are the things that I really care about, and this is why I'm getting burnt out, and this is why things aren't working. Like, for instance, I really value like location freedom. So when I would keep picking like brick and mortar positions, I wonder why I wasn't being very happy about it. Or, you know, I valued working on like one thing at a time and just like putting all my effort into that one thing at a time, because I can get very overwhelmed. I didn't know that about myself. And so when I would get like, you know, again, I would be in a position where I would have multiple things going on at once. Like that's where the breakdown happened.
Totally. Yes. That is so true. That is so true.
So, another thing I was thinking about is like someone who's listening might think like, I don't really have a lot of time to be doing mindfulness in the beginning of my like articulation and phonology session, but, I think it's just as important, because I think sensory processing, like, helping children like regulate at the beginning of a session has, gotten a lot of support. And I think that that one's more accepted for any population than maybe like practicing mindfulness. I'm imagining there's a difference between like regulation and mindfulness, but I think that we need to make mindfulness, like the practices that you shared, more accepted as well.
Yes, totally. And I think you're right. I think sometimes when we think of regulation, it might be more of those, you know, maybe those like exactly those tangible strategies. Here's what I'm doing. Here's how I'm feeling. But what mindfulness kind of does is you can notice those things, but you want to accept them. So I think self-regulation goes, here's how I'm feeling. What can we do to maybe not feel this way if it's not lifting us up? Mindfulness goes, okay, that's great, but I want you to know it's okay to feel that way too. The important thing is what we do with it. So it's really that acceptance and acknowledgement piece in mindfulness, is like not ignoring those emotions when they come up and being aware, so that if my student during the session is saying, you know, I'm feeling in my body that I've got a lot of energy, like you're being really mindful by acknowledging that and noticing that and bringing it up to me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for providing that distinction. Guys, isn't she so good at like explaining things? It's like awesome. And then I think also, if anybody's listening to this and they're like, oh my gosh, energy, like schminergy, what are they talking about? But if you've ever felt like your nerves, like you've had too much coffee one day and you're literally like shaking, or you feel like you just need like a big hug, or you need like a weighted blanket on you, like that is energy within your body. And I found out about something maybe like a year ago, in regards to like negative and positive ions, and how like being near the ocean or running water actually provides your body with like negative ions, which is odd because you would think they would like, you would want positive ions, but it's negative ions, which help balance your body out. So if you've ever like taken a walk outside or like been near water and you just feel so much more relaxed, that's the negative ions. So it sounds like really foo-foo, but it's real. And I mean, just those examples, think about yourself and what your body responds to.
Well, that's grounding. So that's the practice of grounding. And the whole idea is that our bodies are chaos. We have so much energy. And when we use things like crystals or grounding, we are harmonizing all the hormones, all the energy in our body. And so that's like one of the biggest things is, yeah, walking outside, especially with your feet off of, with your shoes off, and literally taking in the energy from Mother Earth and bringing it around, like it will change you. Because as we said, I mean, Newton's law says energy is not created or destroyed. It's just transferred. So through our day, we are transferring it all the time. And like you said, when we're mindful of what the energy is that we're bringing in, it can make a really intense change. And I think I did a little, I shared this a while ago, but Sesame Street started a new series called Monster Meditation. Aww. And one of their first episodes is Cookie Monster using his five senses. He's grounding. So he's can't wait for the cookies. He's feeling so anxious, right? He's not in the present moment. So what he does is he uses each sense to focus on something concrete in front of him to forget about the cookies. So he sees the timer. He smells the strawberries. He feels his fur. And he talks about other things. And then the timer goes off. He's like, oh, the cookies are ready. So I love that. We are literally seeing like Sesame Street, other things, noticing the power of this and bringing it to our students and saying like, this is grounding, this is mindfulness, but in a very easy to acknowledge and kind of take in type of way.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I don't think I didn't know about that monster meditation. That's so cute. I can't wait to like use that with my daughter when she's older and clients too.
You would love them. There's literally 5 or 6 episodes. There's an Elmo one, a Grover one, a song about sharing, belly breathing songs. Sesame Street has really, really gotten into that. And I love it.
Yeah, that's so awesome. So that's, I think, a good segue into like how mindfulness can be applied to therapy with like the pediatric population. I know you mentioned some already. Was there anything else that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I think another big piece of it is some of just like the literature that we use. So I found a lot of books that talk about mindset and things. So there's this one book that I just got. It's called Preston is Positive or Positive Preston. And he talks about in the book how when he's feeling these feelings that he can't do something, he can stop, he can take a deep breath, and he can tell himself, I can do this. I am able. And so I think that using literacy and using other examples to teach it to kiddos is also really important. Because even with a lot of my kids, I've noticed that sometimes teaching something on a puppet or on a character before having them have to apply it personally can be way easier to digest and understand. So I like to try to use different examples in videos and in literature to show them, hey, here is this character using and acknowledging and practicing mindfulness. And then when they need to do it, sometimes they'll go, oh, right, like Preston did. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. And they're making that connection to themselves while also working on free literacy and all of those other great things. So it's kind of just doubling down on working on emotional regulation and mindfulness while also working on literacy with them.
I love that suggestion. So what does like the research say about using mindfulness in speech therapy? Do you have like any articles? I pulled up one as well that I'm like happy to share too.
Yeah, you know what? I haven't looked as much as in speech therapy. Some of the research I've looked at is, for example, like how mindfulness has changed the brains of people that have been stressed and things. Like there was a study done in like 2005, and they found that people who routinely meditated and practiced mindfulness had a significantly thicker region in the frontal cortex, which we know is responsible for reasoning, decision-making, executive functioning. So by practicing that and strengthening that area, we can ensure that our kiddos are critical thinkers and using those things. But I haven't looked at an article itself on in speech therapy. So I'd be so curious to see what that says.
Well, I think it's like really new anyways, because this article is from July 15, 2020. and it's by Medina.
Oh, wow.
And Mead. It's called an exploration of mindfulness and speech language pathology. And we'll make sure to include this and the other references that Rachel mentioned in the pod course handout. But it basically talks about what mindfulness is and how they are being used in our field to treat fluency disorders and adult cognitive and language deficits. And it gives suggested mindfulness activities. So like I said, we'll make sure to include that. And I'm sure there are more too. So if we find some more, we'll put that in the pod course handout as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, I'm excited for more research to come out about it. Sorry, say that again.
Me too.
I think we did.
What I was kind of saying was, I like how you referenced the adults.
Yeah. I think
because I always kind of thought about that.
Yeah. Well, and it looks like there's another article about mindfulness training and stuttering therapy. It looks like it's been applied to fluency therapy quite a bit in recent years, but I'd love to see more research like with school-aged children.
Yeah, I think all of that. And you know, now that I'm kind of thinking about it, I think like for me, I'm kind of remembering this moment where I used it a little bit with an adult and I was like, oh, this is like such a big moment. Was when I worked at, I did like a clinical placement at it's called the Rehab Institute of Chicago. They changed the name to like the Shirley Ryan Rehab Institute. And we worked with patients it was intensive outpatient. So it was after they were in the hospital, they would come to this facility for like 6 hours a day and do speech, OT, and PT. And I remember having a patient that he could not be in his session. And one day he was like, I can't stop thinking about my neighbor who's mowing his lawn, and I can't do that anymore. And I can't be there. And I said to him, you know, comparison is a thief of joy. There's always going to be someone doing something different than what we're doing. And if we're focused on that and not this moment at hand, we're just hurting your progress and your growth in this moment. So when we focus on him, we're just giving more power to that. So why not focus on this moment at hand? And that quote stuck with that patient so much that when I was done, he like had me send it to him on a, like in a picture frame, and he like lived his life by it because he was just like, you're right. You can't look at everything around us. We have to be here. And that was, I think for me, like an aha moment where I was like, oh my God. So speech therapy kind of involves mental health and mindfulness and mindset. Like it's more than just these practices and interventions. It's those things, but it's also so much more.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I'm glad that he responded so well and like wanted it to be like written as a quote. That's awesome.
So cute.
How can SLPs learn more about mindfulness or even become certified if they're interested?
Yeah, so there's a few different ways. So I have shared right now that I'm finishing up my mindfulness-based stress reduction certification. That's called MBSR. And I believe it was created by Joan Kabat-Zinn. And there's a lot of different courses or a lot of programs that host this course online. So that is one way to learn about it if you're interested. It is an 8-week course where you learn about the science behind mindfulness, you practice various meditation techniques, and you go through it that way. There's also now, I think, a lot more new research in just everyday books. So there's a few books that I've shared before that I can link here. One of them that I love for people that are just wanting to start using it, it's called Practicing Mindfulness. The author is Sokolow, I think I'll link it, but it's 75 different practices. And what I say to SLPs that are wanting to start, I say, just grab the book. Every morning, turn to a page, just turn to a random one and see what speaks to you. Try that exercise. See what those sensations, those feelings are like, slowing down, being present, and kind of take note of that. And then you can kind of start to build up a repertoire or a toolbox of those activities to then modify and teach to littles. So it's a lot of kind of learning it for yourself first, I think, and then using that speech brain to modify it to make it really simple first, then language, so our kids can do it too.
Yeah, that's so helpful. Thank you for sharing about that. Thank you for tuning into this episode. It was made possible through our partnership with Presence Learning. With over 12 years of experience and 3 million teletherapy sessions delivered, Presence Learning is the leading provider of live online special education related services for pre-K through 12 nationwide. Presence Learning has an award-winning platform and a community of over 1,600 clinicians in its care network. They offer licensing support, 100% remote work, the ability to design your own schedule, and a supportive community that helps you reach more students while doing what you love. Check out the link in this episode description to learn more about Presence Learning. So, is there anything else you want to share before we wrap up today?
Oh man, I think the biggest thing is that what I just kind of want to remind to everyone is that, again, what the whole idea with mindfulness is just being in this moment. And not to get like too philosophical on us and all, but unfortunately, you know, we make plans and we think and we worry. And 99% of the time, those things don't happen. And we put all of these crazy thoughts and images and ideas into our heads and stress ourselves out. And what I just want to remind people is that the moment that we have in front of us right now is so beautiful and we should be so grateful for it. And what I say to people that are so in their heads, or whenever we're sitting down, I look at them and right now I could say to you, in this moment, what problem do we have? We don't have any. In this present moment right now, you and I are here, we are breathing, we are talking, we are happy and focused. This is what we need to focus on. And just finding some more beauty in those everyday moments when you're even doing nothing can then allow you to accept life as it comes in any way and still find beauty in it. Even if you're stressed, still being able to say, you know, I'm so grateful that I get to do these things and that I have the ability and the choices and the power to make these choices here. So just accepting and celebrating whatever moment is in front of us and acknowledging that we do have the power to change our thoughts, our perceptions, and our actions. And while we can't control what happens to us, we can control what we do about it.
I think that is so amazing. And I realized we didn't talk that much about like gratitude. Does gratitude play a big part in mindfulness as well?
I think so, because to me, gratitude is just, like I said, acknowledging and celebrating those little things. And by doing that, when you recognize what's going on around you and celebrate it, it allows you to be more mindful because you say, I'm so grateful that the sun is shining. I'm so grateful that I can share this with you and I can control my thoughts. And it brings your thoughts to this moment again in front of you. And so by practicing gratitude, you're focusing on the things that are positive and do lift you up. And I really think that it just helps you be more mindful and feel like you have some more control, because so many things we take for granted. And when we recognize that, it's like, oh, I can control this. Like even just waking up in the morning, you know, we have patients that when they wake up in the morning, they go right to a feeding tube. They can't control their breathing. Every morning I wake up, I say, I'm so grateful that I can open my eyes on my own, that I can breathe. And it brings me to this moment. And I say, this moment in front of me is what I can control, is what I'm grateful for, is what I need to focus on. So I think it just brings a lot more beauty to what's in front of you, even if it's tricky or maybe not ideal.
That is very well said. Thank you for providing that perspective. Do you have like favorite accounts that like social media accounts, like speech language pathology accounts or websites that you could direct people to, that if they want to just kind of be like surrounded by more mindfulness practices, I guess. So yours especially.
So right now I just started another affirmation challenge. So I'm always posting affirmations and mindfulness on my page, but another huge name in the world of mindfulness and mindset is Eckhart Tolle. He has written multiple books, The Power of Now, A New Earth. And he has an Instagram and a website. And I subscribe to his website because I every single week he has free YouTube videos that he sends out. And like last week, I listened to one about letting go. And so Eckhart Tolle, he has an Instagram page and a website. Michael Singer, he is also a big name in the mindfulness world and an author. I believe he has an Instagram and a website. And then there's another account I love. Her name is Affirmation Addict. And she just posts different affirmations and different statements that just really help you feel powerful in what you're doing on her page. And I think that her page too is a little bit more like female oriented. And so a lot of the things that just apply to what we're doing in our fields. So she's another great one.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing those. Yeah. So if everyone is interested, well, everyone, if someone is not familiar with you and this is the first time they're hearing from you, it's such a shame, first off, but if they are interested in learning more, where can they find and connect with you?
Yeah. So I think my main interactions are on my Instagram page, which is Speech with Rach. I also have a website, Speech with Rach, and that's where you can sign up for my newsletter. And usually bi-weekly, I send my favorites of what I'm listening to, what I'm reading. I send updates on freebies and such. I also have a podcast myself that's called Speech with Rach on Instagram. On Apple and Spotify as well. Facebook, TikTok, I mean, you name it. If you type Speech with Rach into Google, I'm sure all of my things will come up. But my biggest page is my Instagram, I would say, and my website. But at Speech with Rach, anywhere you look is where you can find me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rachel. This has been such a pleasure and just such a breath of fresh air. I'm going to make sure that I'm more mindful going forward because being a new mom has really set me back quite a bit. I'm so, so, so grateful, but I need to put more of these into practice. So just speaking with you got me inspired and I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. That's so awesome. And yeah, you do, especially as a new mom, your role's changing. You got totally new energy in your house. So you gotta definitely adjust to that.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, thank you so much. Until next time. Thank you so much for listening. By the way, have you joined the SSU crew yet? By joining, you get access to the free goods section on our website, plus podcast updates, special event notifications, and therapy inspiration. You can sign up at bit.ly/joinSSU crew, all lowercase, or just find the link in this episode description. Also, don't forget to take a screenshot of this episode so that you can always refer back to it and share it on social media if you really love the topic. Take care and remember to always fill your speechy side cup first before you can pour into others.